Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, what's going on, Giants fans? Welcome to the latest episode of our Talk is Cheap Giants podcast from NJ Advanced Media, the Star Ledger, and NJ.com. Daryl Slater here with Bob Brookover. It is Friday morning, the 21st of April right now, and about a month since we last spoke to you guys. And we wrapped up free agency in the Darren Waller trade last time around, and that was right before the NFL's owners' meetings in Arizona. And so really what's happened since we last spoke was the owners' meetings. Joe Shane and John Mara spoke there. They, you know, had some stuff to say, certainly about the Saquon Barkley situation most especially, and we'll get to that. And the Giants started their mostly voluntary spring workouts on Monday here a few days ago. That'll be, you know, about a month from now. They'll do the OTAs, practices, and all that jazz. And Joe Shane yesterday here on Thursday did his pre-draft press conference. Not a lot from that. Most notably the Saquon Barkley stuff, and that sort of has rendered the draft a little bit of an afterthought. But in addition to kind of talking Dexter Lawrence, Saquon Barkley, we'll get into draft preview. Obviously, that is coming up next Thursday through Saturday. The Giants picking 25th in round one. And and so there's plenty to discuss there as we get into it here. Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Daryl, how are you? It's been a long time since we've talked, but not that much has happened or changed in terms of Saquon, Dexter, and we don't know anymore who they're going to pick 25th than we did 6 weeks ago or what, however long ago it was, but 4 weeks ago. But neither do the Giants. They probably have their board more set up than they did then, but they're still at 25, still at the mercy of other teams.
For sure. And I think we have a little bit of clarity on their positions of need. I believe, I can't recall when John Feliciano officially left, probably after we last talked, but we'll get into the positions of need and the draft prognostications and all that good stuff in a bit. We'll start here with the most notable things, that Saquon Barkley. So the bottom line here with this situation, nothing has changed, as Joe Shane said, since the NFL owners' meetings. That was, you know, 3-4 weeks ago. So here's the thumbnail situation of where they're at. There is no contract offer on the table for Saquon Barkley. Joe Shane really isn't thinking about it right now because he's focused on the draft, as you know, as he should be, because there really is no deadline for this until July 17th. We all know a franchise tag deadline. In the meantime, Saquon Barkley is frustrated. He is not signed his franchise tag, so he's not under contract, so he can't even show up at anything, technically. Essentially, he's refusing to, by not signing the tag, he's refusing to show up, which is not really a big deal at all in the spring, including the mandatory minicamp. These are informal practices. Where it does become a big deal is, especially because Joe Shane has said he's comfortable with Saquon Barkley playing on the tag this year on a one-year deal. When it does become a big deal is after the 17th. So if he still hasn't signed his tag by the start of camp, which is about a week and a half after the 17th, what then? And that's when the drama could really crank up. We don't know. I mean, maybe he just signs his tag here soon. They don't reach an agreement. He plays out the year on a one-year deal. But there's a possibility, certainly, of this standoff getting pretty icy.
There is, and I'll answer your question by throwing another question back at you. What, in your mind, is Saquon's value behind being a Pro Bowl, one of the top 5 to 10 running backs in the NFL? What is his value to the Giants beyond that? And how much should the Giants look at that and consider that as their, you know, standing firm on what they have out there right now, which is the franchise tag of $10.09 million.
Oh, you mean just like his value in terms of being a good locker room guy and stuff?
Yes, locker room guy, good community guy, those things. How should they value that? And how much do you think they value that?
I think they do, and I think they should, but I don't think they do nor should value that in an outsized way. Look, I mean, yeah, he's a good locker room leader. He's by all accounts a solid citizen, and so. But there are a lot of guys in there who are like that.
That's true, but he probably has more to deal with it more than others because of his stature on the team.
Sure. You
know, I give him a lot of credit for being readily available. You know, there's some talk about, you know, Daniel Jones doesn't really like that part of it, although he's available every day too. But if you had to say, okay, I got to go to the Daniel Jones or Saquon Barkley today to get something for a story or, you know, or something about a situation's going on, you're probably going to go to Saquon because your chances of getting something better are there.
Sure.
And there's value to that too. Yes.
He's a good representative for the team and in the franchise. But you know, the issue, what I would point out is he brought this on himself. I mean, he and his agent, Kim Mialy, they overplayed their hand here. They overestimated his value. They did not take the contract offer that was offered during the season. And I think one thing worth pointing out is one thing that's never been leaked, and by leaked, I mean Saquon's agent leaking this to reporters who let's just say tend to be sympathetic towards Saquon's angle, is the guaranteed money that the Giants offered in that contract. And that matters. But let's look at it like this. If the Giants really super lowballed this guy with that offer during the year,
it would have been out there.
It would have been out there. So right. Like, logically, you can look at it and say they made him a fair and reasonable offer. He declined it because he wanted more, which is his right. The running back market cratered. And Barkley, most notably, his agent, did not foresee the possibility, you know, what happened, which is they lock up Daniel Jones on his contract, and they were able to tag franchise tag Saquon Barkley. Look, this is Joe Shane's job. You know, he took advantage of the fact that Saquon Barkley and his agent overplayed their hand. What was he supposed to do? Like, feel bad for him and then say, oh, you know what? Like go ahead and hit the open market. Like, what? Like, no. Look, he has to own his share of the blame here. I understand he's frustrated about being tagged, but he brought this on himself to some degree. And so,
if you were Saquon, I'll keep asking questions because it's a lot easier to ask questions. would you fire Kim Mialy and Rock Nation if you were Saquon?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe they have a good, the things that we don't know are this, like they seemingly have a good relationship, right? So there's some personal and professional fondness there.
We know they are because they have relationships with the NFL on different things, the group itself. So maybe, you know, there's things, and this is one of the things that John Mara brought up when trying to convince Saquon to stay with the Giants is, you know, they may be able to get him things, especially in the New York area, that other agents can't, in terms of endorsements and things like that, and appearances and, you know, speaking appearances and things like that. If, you know, and that's especially important after a career, you know. That was John Mara's point, that if Saquon is a Giant for life, you know, somebody like Tiki Barber was a Giant for life. There's a career out there in the New York market for you, doing something for the rest of your life. I mean, I live in Philadelphia. I've seen it with players who weren't even stars. You know, the biggest star on the radio here is in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia is Ike Reese, in the market that I lived in. You know, and he was a special teams guy, you know, so those things happen. And for Saquon, they probably would happen, you know, in multiple things because he is such a good player and a person who's well liked in the New York market.
Yeah. And for him, like I can totally see how, like, he's saying, like, okay, yeah, that's great, but I want to win a championship and make money during my playing career. And the rest of that, I'll worry about it later. I'm not thinking about that right now. And you know, those are his immediate priorities, winning and making money. I don't know. Like, so the one thing we don't know here is, like, when you talk about maybe firing his agent is, like, and we're just speculating here about all this stuff, but maybe he's the one who said turn the deal down, right? So she works for him, but, like, she can't go ahead and accept the deal if he's saying, like, no, I don't want to. So let's be clear here, like,
very true. Yep.
he can say yes or no on all this because she is literally an agent for him. Like she's an, you know, an agent to make his decisions. And so that's part of it. But the bottom line is Saquon Barkley is not a victim here. I mean, they made him what seemingly is a reasonable contract offer and he turned it down. And so okay, so now what? I think that's what we have to kind of pitch ahead here.
The Saquon Barkley might not be a victim, but the longer this drags on, the Giants could be a victim to this.
that's what we can talk about. Like, so, okay, so what now? Like, the door is ajar to him because he hasn't signed the tag, skipping some or a lot of training camp because he's not under contract. He can't be fined. We don't know if he's going to do that. We don't know if he's thinking about doing that. But then it becomes like, okay, could he skip regular season games? And like, so let's assess those possibilities. Like, what do you make of it?
I don't think he will. I mean, you don't want to leave $10 million, $10.1 million, essentially on the table and not play for that money. Just doesn't seem like the right move. Le'Veon Bell is I think the most recent guy to do it. Certainly most recent running back. It didn't work out well for him. Long time ago, Emmitt Smith did it. I don't know if it worked out for him or not financially. Obviously he came back, played well. The Cowboys went on and won a Super Bowl. So from that sense, and he still made lots of money. I don't know. I can't see him doing that. I just can't, fathom him doing that. But if he wants to be hard-nosed about it, he can take it right up to that point and say, all right, finally on July 17th, I'll do this. Or he can take it into training camp, say, you know what, I don't feel like going through those hot days till in the middle of August. I'll wait till August 20th to do it. Would that hurt him as a player? I don't know. I'm sure there are studies done about players holding out or missing time and, you know, how often they're injured compared to, but, you know, to me still, that's a lot of time, just a luck of the draw, especially in this day and age when it's so easy to have a personal trainer and keep yourself in shape year round. And so I don't, you know, he can take this for a long time if he really wants to and play hardball. And he it doesn't mean he's going to get his money, but he can cause a lot of misery. And how angry is he? That's basically what it comes down to. How angry is he that, I'm sure there's a part of him say, hey, you offered me this. I thought you would keep that deal on the table, no matter what.
Yeah, that's true too. They yanked the contract and Joe Shane publicly said he yanked the contract, which to me is like a little bit, I'm all for a guy saying what's on his mind and everything. It felt a little bit like rubbing it in.
Right. Joe, I mean, you could see that yesterday had his draft news conference, which essentially became his Saquon news conference. That he is on edge and not thrilled with what's going on here because he's basically answering multiple questions about he's trying to get ready for the draft and answering multiple questions about a guy who's unhappy on his team with the same answer over and over again. Nothing has changed.
Yeah, but to me, it's like whatever for Joe. Look, the guy doesn't really have to talk to the media that much for a year. So sit there.
No, I agree, but I'm just saying that showed his it's under his skin some, you know.
Oh, for sure. And he's like, look, I haven't talked to him. Okay, so they're not talking at all, and nor do they have to be talking or negotiating. And so, like we said, it's the 17th of July is what really matters. So Barkley could take it all the way up till then. And really it's training camp. So like Barkley could take it to the eve of training camp and he signs his tag and he shows up at camp. And honestly, like there's really no impact except for him maybe still being frustrated.
Right. And the other thing you see is, as Shane said, they're knee deep in the draft right now.
Yeah.
Maybe when the draft's over, his focus turns more to Saquon and getting, we haven't even talked about Dexter, getting an extension for Dexter. Maybe after those two things happen, the focus goes much harder on those two things.
Yeah, and I asked him yesterday, like, do you have a like a new contract offer in mind? Obviously, you yanked the contract offer that was, what, 12 to 12 and a half million a year, and we don't know the guaranteed money on that. But is there a new one? Like, would you make a new one? Are you just going to say, nah, play out the year on the tag? We don't know where his head's at with that, and it sounds like he hasn't really thought about it yet either. But like to me, so, okay. So, like, let's just say he, you know, July 17th comes and goes and there's no contract, which I think is at this point really possible, even though it's 3 months out about. And then he doesn't sign the tag, which leaves open the possibility of skipping some camp. Like, obviously, like, if he skips a few days or a couple weeks of camp, like, yeah, it's drama, but does it really affect things from the Giants or Barkley that much? Probably not. But the longer it goes, yeah, the Giants need him on the field, but he needs to be on the field too. Like, so there's no, for me, like, there's, once July 17th comes and goes, the word holdout does not apply because he's not holding out for anything. There's nothing more he can get other than the 1 year deal, right? So it's not a holdout.
Right.
He's staying away out of spite. Literally out of spite. Right. And also to preserve his body. You know, you think like Le'Veon Bell did, but not only did the Le'Veon Bell situation not work out 5 years ago, cautionary tale and all that, Le'Veon Bell was a better and more productive player in the years before that situation than Saquon Barkley's been, period.
And then he came back and his career was over.
And he came, yeah, right. So in multiple ways, it's not a comparable situation. It was the second straight year Bell had been tagged. It would be insane. And I'm not saying Barkley's even thinking about this. It would be a terrible decision for him to skip regular season games, okay? What exactly is he going to be showing teams by doing that? Does he think that, you know, doing that again, and this is kind of like a straw man thing because we don't know where his head's at. Does he think that like doing that would, you know, it's all hypothetical, but would, you know, would that encourage teams to pay him big money next year? No, the running back market's a disaster. This guy's had one good year since his injury. Like, so.
Right. To get the money he wants, he needs to go out and have an even better year and then get an assurance from the Giants, which they, you know, they won't give him a written insurance, but, you know, kind of come to an agreement here. Hey, I'm going to come back if you agree not to tag me again next year so I can go test the market, you know.
So, yeah, he needs to play and play well in a prove it year. He's auditioning for money. He needs to go out and audition. Staying away would not be the answer. So for as much as we can sit here and say, oh, the Giants need him, they need him, he needs to play. He needs to play, period. Like, this is not like, he has no leverage, period. The guy has no leverage. Like,
I'm gonna jump to a draft thing here just because he's, and I've written about it, but just because it impacts this situation. So Bijan Robinson falls to number 25 on the board. What do? Do you take him? And do you take him and really, I mean, that might be the end for Saquon, because now they've not only getting the contract you want, they've also drafted your replacement essentially. I mean, you know, this is probably going to be your last year in New York. They've got a new star in town, and you know, if it's, you know, it's always hype until the guy proves himself, but if this guy lives up to the hype, he might be a better version of Saquon Barkley that you get at number 25 in the draft. And as I've written, the Giants choose, they can rescind that tag. All of a sudden, they got $10 million to play around with here. And there's some guys out on the market still that depth-wise could certainly help you. Maybe even starting role-wise could help you. Obviously, the con to that is, you're not going to be drafting a position of need.
Yeah.
But just your thoughts if you did that.
It's a fascinating possibility for all the reasons you brought up. And again, it really depends on who's there. And obviously if he's there, and then also who else is there. But I would say no, just generally speaking, because again, you have all these other areas in need. You can play out the year with a really good proven running back in Saquon Barkley. And you know what? Like, even if he you're trying to accomplish something this year, right? And even if he walks next year in free agency, you're looking at probably getting a comp pick, depending on, again, the comp pick formula is based on who you bring in versus who leaves in free agency. But that's where I kind of fall on it. Like, just let him play out the year, let it see how it goes, address another position there. So I wouldn't, generally speaking, but there's a lot of what ifs that could point to it, why it could work, I think.
Yeah, why, yeah,
it could be a reasonable decision.
Right. To me, the interesting part also is just that cap money it frees up. That's a lot of cap money to have right now at this time of year.
Big domino. That's a big domino. And we'll kind of shift gears. And speaking of cap money, and he's kind of flown under the radar, Dexter Lawrence has, because of the nature of the Saquon Barkley situation. So Dexter Lawrence, a little bit more cut and dried and standard here. He's got a $12.4 million cap number on the fifth-year option coming up. That would obviously be lowered by whatever long-term contract he signs. So his is a bit higher than the Barkley number at $10 million. So this is all fairly standard posturing and negotiations. Player stays away during the voluntary portion of the spring. He's under contract. So for Dexter Lawrence, the more interesting part comes up in mid-June and not mid-July, is does he skip the minicamp and dare the Giants to find him? He wants a new contract. It's normal for these guys to stay away. He deserves a new contract. He's a great player. He's a foundational player. There's no way they're going to let him go into the fifth-year option, final year of his rookie deal. He's going to get a new contract this offseason. The question is just where does the money fall and how does it compare to Jeffrey Simmons, the money that he got already, and also to whatever Quinnen Williams gets with the Jets.
Yeah, and the other guy in there is Chris Jones, who supposedly is going to get a deal from the Chiefs. But it was an interesting – it's a fascinating – I looked at that whole rookie class. There was a record 6 defensive tackles taken in that rookie class, and 5 of them right now want new deals. I don't think Ed Oliver in Buffalo is going to get one. He was the number 9 overall. Dexter is, certainly him and Quinnen Williams are certainly at the top of that list. And I think you could throw him, those two, and Jeffrey Simmons into a bucket and pull one out, and you'd be, whoever the general manager was would be thrilled whichever one they pull out. It wouldn't really matter. So, has Jeffrey Simmons set the top end of the market for the – well, it's not the top end because Aaron Donald was the top end and way above all of them. But, I think he has. And if the Giants go just north of that, they're going to have a deal with him. Same with the Jets. I don't know how much the agents want to, much more than that, but – I can't see them, any of them, getting much more than what Simmons got, which was a terrific deal. I guess it's 23.5 average deal, 23.5 million average deal. So, it's like, as you said, it's going to get done. It doesn't sound like this is a big dispute. Joe Shane didn't seem to be the least bit upset that Dexter has chosen not to come to these voluntary, as he put it, voluntary workouts. Said right up front, I'm still negotiating. We're in deep in the draft, so that leads me to believe when the draft is over, they'll get deeper into the talks and get something done. So it's not a big deal at this point. It's all a matter of what are the details going to be when the ink dries on his contract.
Yeah, and if you look at the Simmons contract, just kind of in the weeds of it, in terms of the guaranteed money, he basically got, a 3-year, $60 million deal, in terms of when they can get out of the contract. He got, 4 years, 94, but it's 60 million.
Although with those guys, I think there's probably a pretty good chance he finishes it out, but we'll see.
Yeah. And at 23 and a half a year, it's really 4 years tacked onto the fifth year option. So he's under contract through 2027. It looks like here. But the bottom line is, yes, I think Dexter Lawrence will get something similar, if not a bit north of that, and probably Quinnen Williams too. And they're, like you said, they're very comparable players. No one's getting Aaron Donald money, obviously for various reasons. One of which is that none of these guys are as proven as Aaron Donald, who is one of the best players in the history of the NFL. I think that the Dexter Lawrence situation is certainly much less complex than Saquon Barkley's. Obviously, they want to have Dexter Lawrence around. He's going to be around. And the question just becomes how much money he gets. So he's staying away. Also, during the voluntary portion, we'll see what happens in mid-June when the mandatory minicamp rolls around. Maybe they have a deal by then. Maybe they don't, and he shows up. And maybe they don't, and he stays away, and he says, go ahead and find me. So that'll be a pretty interesting situation. Obviously not as much drama as Saquon Barkley, just because it's pretty clear that Dexter Lawrence is there's not a lot of debate about whether he's worth keeping, right? And
to me, that's one of the funniest things about this entire, both with Saquon and Dexter. You know, they feel like they're both players feel like they're better value than they're being paid right now. And Joe Shane agrees with them both because he, you know, with Saquon, he showed it by making an offer north of what he's the tag. And with Dexter, he said over and over again, oh, yeah, we need to do a new deal with him. That's an unusual situation where the general manager says, yes, I agree. Or, you know, essentially he's saying, yes, I agree. But he's got two guys holding out. Interesting twist to the whole thing.
For sure. And so we'll switch and pivot, I guess, to the draft. And it's, again, the draft's a little bit of an afterthought, right? Because of the Barkley drama, because of the Dexter Lawrence, I wouldn't even call it drama, but the continued Dexter Lawrence not getting a contract. That's a clunky way of putting it.
And also because they're picking 25th.
But let's be real here. I mean, this roster still needs work. I mean, this team got obliterated by the Eagles in the divisional round. They have a lot of weaknesses, a lot of holes, even coming out of free agency. You know, everyone knows most obviously like outside receiver, number two cornerback, and, you know, Adoree Jackson entering the final year of his deal too. So cornerback in general, left guard is a question mark. Center is an even bigger question mark than left guard. So those would be the obvious areas that everyone knows.
And you don't believe Joe Shane when he says he's very comfortable with his 12 offensive linemen?
Yeah. You can't like put him in a blender and make us one starting center out of 12 guys, right? So like, I'm sorry, but I'm not sold on Ben Bredesen playing center, mostly because he's never actually really played center in a game before. I don't even think he has at all. So
I wonder if any of that is influenced by John Feliciano wasn't really a center either. And not that he was a great one, but he certainly got them through the season. Was the center who got them to the playoffs.
So, a vet, though, you know, and Bredesen's a little younger, so, but he has experience, so.
He does. I've talked to Bredesen enough to know that he will take the challenge seriously if that's what they put in front of him. And he did, and he was, in my opinion, he was, if you look at the whole season, and this is even though he was sharing time at the end with Nick Gates, and maybe, I don't know who graded better, but he was their best left guard last year. Having said that, that's what I would want him to do again this year. He was pretty good at it. Maybe there's a good chance he gets even better at it in his second year as the starting left guard, and given the opportunity to win that job entirely. And then I would go get my center in the draft. So that's what I would do.
Totally reasonable. And I think, you know, Bredesen did play the most snaps at center, more than Nick Gates last year. So it's not like the Giants really lost their starting left guard in Nick Gates. I mean, because Bredesen played more. The question then becomes, like, if you move Bredesen to center, then you probably perhaps have to play Joshua Zudu, a left guard, and he was not good last year as a rookie. So there's a lot of things here. And then the other thing hovering over this draft is Joe Shane, his margin for error or whatever is he's not going to get as many swings. You want to take as many swings as possible in the draft. They did have the extra third rounder. They traded it to the Raiders for Darren Waller. So now it's one pick in each of the first three rounds, a little bit more, you know, clean and uniform there. Albeit not as preferable for a GM. But the question becomes, what do they do? So, you know, Tom McShay, Mel Kiper did a 3-round mock. We can kind of riff off that a little bit just because it's sort of an interesting simulation from a couple guys who know a few things. So here's what they had them doing. They had the Giants picking Deontay Banks, the cornerback from Maryland, at 25 and passing on Quentin Johnston, who goes with the next pick. And we can circle back and revisit a little bit around one, but what they had them doing in round two at 57 was John Michael Schmitz, the center from Minnesota. I think entirely possible. And then you're thinking, oh, gee, no receiver yet. 89 in round three, their lone third round pick. Kiper McShay had him going with Nathaniel Dell, 5'8" receiver from Houston, which, a little bit of redundancy there with Wandale Robinson, but he's coming off the ACL. But we can kind of take those one by one and address them broadly. You know, there's any number of ways that this first round could unfold. But at least in this particular simulation, you know, a couple of the obvious cornerbacks are gone: Devin Witherspoon, Christian Gonzalez, and then just going down the list in terms of a Jackson Smith and Jeeba is gone as well. I'm just quickly scrolling here. Zay Flowers is gone. And Jordan Addison is gone as well at 21. Emmanuel Forbes, another good cornerback, is gone at 22. And Joey Porter Jr. Gone at 23. So that's where the Giants are squeezed at 25. And they go with Deontay Banks in this thing while passing on Quentin Johnston. I think it's probably a receiver or cornerback in round one. Do you think they could draft Schmitz in round one, or where do you fall on everything I just rambled about?
I don't think they – I think they wouldn't draft Schmitz in round one because I think the feeling is, you know, and again, I'm an outsider looking in who I will say I've read more about the draft than at any point in my life this year. And I just reading, it seems like a center of good value will be available. I don't want to pronounce his name right. Luke Weipler. I think that's how you pronounce it, from Ohio State. And he's a local kid too. I think he played at Bosco. I think that's right. But
he played at St. Joe's.
St. Joe's Montfiel. I'm sorry. So he's supposed to be available. The Wisconsin Tippmann could be available. So one of those three, and Schmitz might even be available too, as he is in this mock. So I think you got one of those three. So I don't think they'll pick Schmitz at one. I think this is one of the mocks you laid out of the seven round mocks. You know, I don't know if Osiris Torrance was from Florida. He was more of a guard. Was he on that board with Kuiper? And
they have him going 35th to the Colts.
Okay. That's one of the things, like, you know, I was an outsider in Philadelphia looking at this from 90 miles away when the Giants were at their best. Both errors of them winning their two Super Bowls in a span of a few years. I just remember them having obviously great defensive lines, Lawrence Taylor, Michael Strahan, but also having great offensive lines. You already have that at left tackle with Andrew Thomas. You know, bringing two guys in this draft at the top of the draft, you know, a starter and an interior guy. And you got the makings of a pretty good offensive line going, jumping up a lot from being considered one of the worst. I think you could be considered one of the best. And especially when you factor in what Joe Shane, he says he feels comfortable with the depth of what they have on the offensive line right now. Hey, well, you know what? At some point in the year, you're going to need that depth, as we saw last year. So I wouldn't be adverse to drafting two offensive linemen right at the top and then start filling the cornerback wide receiver thing from there. You know, I wouldn't think that was a bad move, an awful move.
Yeah, it does. You know, they have to do a lot of self-scouting here and see how they feel about Cordell Flott playing outside and Nick McCloud, who got a considerable amount of time last year. But cornerback is one of the hardest positions to play for a rookie. We've seen it.
It really is. I mean, it's the quarterback. It's the quarterback of the defense, really. I mean, in terms of difficulty,
it's a tough position to play. Now, Sauce Gardner went out and just was awesome last year, but there's not. I think the consensus in this draft.
It's don't do a lot of things right, but they can draft some cornerbacks, can't they?
Yeah. Well, D. Milner would beg to differ, but
I'll give you Revis and
every 15 years, right? They get Revis and Sauce Gardner. But there's not a Sauce Gardner in this draft. It doesn't seem. Who the heck knows? We don't know. But
no, until they go play, you don't know.
Yeah, but I think that there's a lot of I think that man, if they go offensive line, that I think there would be a lot of Giants fans who would be. You know, their heads would explode over that. But I think pragmatically it could work. A lot depends on how they feel about the current guys on their roster. And also, like, you know, can Darren Waller stay healthy? Because he's essentially a receiver. And so do you have to draft an outside receiver when you have, they have a ton of bodies in the receiver room, but no sure thing number one. And so, yeah, I think the one thing to remember about Joe Shane's offense, and then this particularly ties into the Dell projection in 89 there, is, and he's a versatile guy. He's played inside in the slot. He's played outside receiver. So I'll just, you know, Kuiper has a good little blurb here. He had 199 catches. Dell did over the past 2 years. I'm not saying they're going to draft this, but this guy, but this underscores how Brian Daboll's offense, you know, embraces versatility. And 61 of those 199 came when he was wide right, and 60 came in the slot on the left side of the field. So he's lined up on both sides of the field, in the slot and outside. He has a funny nickname, this kid, Tank, because he's, you know, he's 5'8". Get it? He's not a tank, but they call him that. So, yards after catch ability. So there's a lot to like. But again, they just drafted Wandale Robinson last year. So
right. I'm going to go back to the last team to draft two offensive linemen with their first two picks was the Falcons. They got a Caleb McCary with the 31st pick and Chris Lindstrom with the 14th overall pick. Lindstrom was the highest rated guy at right guard with a 95 grade. Pro Football Focus at him, 95 grade, the highest grade of any player in the whole NFL last year. They got him at 14th. And McGarry was the 31st pick. He's been a starter. This was in the 2019 draft. He's been a starter every year, played every game, and was rated the fourth rate highest rated tackle last season. So you get those two guys. But let's go back in Giants history to 1988 and 1989. So in 88, they took Eric Moore from Indiana with the 10th overall pick and Jumbo Elliott from Michigan in the second round. They were both starters on their Super Bowl team a year later. Two years later, I guess it was. Yeah, 90. And then 89, they took Bob Cratch, I think is the name. Let's see.
Yes, he's actually related to
what's that?
He's actually related to a guy who used to work, the great James Cratch.
Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to ask James how he's related, but James used to work for, you know, at the Ledger and NJ.com.
Oh, that's great. He predates me, but I've seen the byline for sure. he was a guard from Iowa. They took him in the third round. In the first round, they took Brian Williams, a center from Minnesota, who was a fascinating story because he didn't start. You'd say, oh, he's a bust. He didn't start his first 5 years with the team. But the only reason he didn't start because he was playing behind Bart Oates. So finally, his sixth season, he started. And I think in his second season or his third season as a starter, he suffered a debilitating eye injury that kept him out a year. And he finally came back and started another 2 years. But he was a really good player who couldn't get on the field because of Bart Oates and then played really well for a few years and got hurt seriously, then came back from it. So had like a 10-year career with the Giants, even though he was only a starter for like four or five of them. Which is very rare, but twice they've done it since, and the last two times they've done it, it's worked out very well for them. Probably getting way off track, and doesn't really matter in terms of this draft. But just to show, it's not a bad idea to sometimes picking two offensive linemen can really work out well for a team.
Yeah, the draft is a crapshoot. So, but if they do it. Which kind of conjures some memories of the 06 draft for the Jets, Brick Ferguson at 4 and Nick Mangold at 29. Granted, the Jets, this isn't a 4 and 29. This is like 25 and or 57. So not the same. But it can work. In terms of other positions they could attack in the draft, I did a little blurb earlier this week about some of the visits the Giants had and the prospects they met with. And granted, you know, as Joe Shane said, they're meeting with some of these prospects, and especially with the top 30 visits at their facility, you know, to rule out some guys too. So it doesn't mean they're super interested in all these guys. But obviously, Some of the takeaways coming out of those were, you know, mainly we'll go positions of need here. We already talked about the receiver situation, the cornerback situation, and then left guard slash center. Those would be the big three. But just kind of running down the list a little bit here as an offshoot of just interesting positions of that they could address in no particular order. What about a number three quarterback here? What's your sense on whether they could go in that direction? It's not going to be Hendon Hooker, obviously. They brought him in.
Right.
What about a late
mid? Like, I don't understand. Like, that visit seems weird to me that they brought him in at all. I don't know what the purpose of that was. It wasn't to eliminate him because he's going to be eliminated by the time they make their pick. You watch what the 49ers did with the very last pick of the draft. In the fourth round last year, the Patriots took Bailey Zappe, who is now in a conversation whether he should replace Mac Jones. Like, and Bailey Zappe threw 62 touchdown passes in his 1 year in the FBS with Western Kentucky. To me, if a guy throws 62 touchdown passes, I have 10 picks and he's available in the sixth or seventh round, I'm taking him. You know, just to see what a guy who threw 62 touchdown passes can do. And I think the Giants should use one of their, at least one of their three seventh round picks on a guy. The guy who interests me down that low is Stetson Bennett. You know, they have a lot of boards have him maybe not even being drafted, but certainly not drafted till the seventh round. The guy, I think, went 29-1 the last 2 years and won two national championships. That's the kind of leadership thing. And that's one of the things people talk about. And Jalen Hurts was obviously a better talent than him. He went in the second round. But the intangible things about Jalen Hurts being a winner everywhere he went, and then he made himself into a better player. I don't know if Stetson Bennett has that. Probably, I'm sure he doesn't have that kind of athletic ability. But – hey, you know what? There's this, as I said in the story I wrote today about a backup quarterback, because there's this story about a guy who fell to the sixth round and the Patriots took him. And, you know, you might have heard his name. But, you know, if I'm the Giants, I do it. Although it seemed yesterday like Joe Shane was lukewarm to the idea, you know, that wasn't really on his radar, but maybe he's just playing possum in that regard.
I think he got peeved about all the Saquon questions and he was just trying to give short answers to get the heck out of there.
That's entirely possible.
With Bennett's an interesting one. I mean, I think they need to draft a developmental quarterback, right? Because for a couple of reasons. Well, they gave Daniel Jones a 2-year contract, right? So, like, but just I'll set that aside. They need a backup. They're not going to have Tyrod Taylor as their backup probably past this year, so they got to figure out who their backup is going to be. And so, you know, you have a hole there because Davis Webb is gone. Now, granted, they could stash Webb on the practice squad all year. You perhaps will have to carry an intriguing rookie. Now, granted, if he's a seventh round guy, maybe you could stash him instead of carrying three quarterbacks. But, you know, having a developmental quarterback doesn't hurt. Bennett, who's, you know, on the shorter side, okay. The interesting thing about him, like, I wouldn't even classify him as developmental because the dude is really old. So I don't know where I'd fall in that. He was born in October of 97. Daniel Jones was born in May of 97. They're like the same age.
No, it's crazy. There's a few that COVID has done that to this draft where there's guys who have played forever because they got these extra years of eligibility, which is good for them. The other guy I really like in this draft is UCLA's Dorian Thompson Robinson. He was a 5-year starter at UCLA. Who I don't think was very good when he started there, but he played 5 years under Chip Kelly. So obviously he's got some NFL insight from his head coach there. By last season, he was a very good quarterback. So he's a guy who interests me, and, you know, he's a dual threat, which, you know, obviously both Tyrod Taylor and Daniel Jones are. So I think that's the kind of thing that Brian Daboll does like to have a dual threat quarterback.
For sure. And he's 23, so a little younger there. So that's an interesting possibility. Obviously, quarterback's always going to be discussed. We talked the running back thing, just kind of going down this thing I wrote. We talked about the running backs, Bijan Robinson and Barkley, so don't have to revisit that. What about another inside linebacker? I think another, a guy they've had in for, I don't know if a visit or they talked to at some point, was Drew Sanders from Arkansas, who is considered a really good blitzing inside linebacker, and obviously Wink Martindale likes to blitz. So they did obviously sign Bobby Okereke, and he is going to be their middle linebacker, but really at the other inside linebacker spots, like Jared Davis. So maybe draft an inside linebacker.
I think somewhere along the line, they're going to take an inside linebacker. You know, maybe if the one they like is a, I don't think they'd do it in the first round, but maybe if the one, if one they really like is available in the second round, it's something you do, because they're still, you know, I could see them drafting almost after the first round. I could see them drafting almost any, not any position, because offensive tackle is not on the board, but I could see them drafting an interior lineman, a, you know, guard or center in the second round. You know, an inside linebacker, certainly, even though you got Okereke in this offseason, you know, an interior defensive lineman, because you can never have enough of those guys, you know, and you'd like to be rotational at that position. Same with the edge rushers. I think they still need more depth at edge rusher. And if you can get a guy who you think you bring in your first year and he becomes part of the rotation, but can become more than that. And hey, if he's the best guy you have on your board, you do that. You know, there's a bunch of guys, second round inside linebackers. I think Cedric Gray from North Carolina, Jack Campbell from Iowa, DeMarvian Overshone from Texas. They're all right around that spot where the Giants pick, maybe a little bit below that, but you know, who knows? That's on you know, one board. What's on one team's board is not the same as what's on another team's board. So, but I can see them drafting a lot of positions in the second round, just about any position except for offensive tackle and quarterback, and probably running back too. But I think a lot of things are in play there.
Yeah, and as we put a bow on this position by position break, I will say, so at the end of this, we'll each make our picks of 25. But like, so I kind of am springing this on you. So just like, think about it as I'm rambling here about this last position. And that would be safety. And Brian Branch visited the Giants from Alabama. Obviously they have one Alabama safety on the roster, Xavier McKinney, even though he didn't play with Brian Branch. Brian Daboll has a ton of Alabama familiarity because he used to be the OC there, knows Nick Saban well. So, you know, maybe a possibility, Brian Branch at 25, he can play corner two, it looks like. This Kuiper McShay mock draft has him going 32, which is really because the Dolphins had to give up their pick because of tampering. That's the first pick to the Steelers in round two. So he'd be there in this projection for the Giants at 25, probably would not be there for their second round pick. In the big picture, as far as safety goes, obviously they're going to be investing in they could certainly be investing in Xavier McKinney after the season. It's a contract year. He's been a very solid player for them. Julian Love left for Seattle. We all know that. They replace him with Bobby McCain, albeit only on a one-year deal. He perhaps is not a long-term solution for them. So maybe try to get a cost-controlled guy here at the other safety spot. Cost-controlled meaning cheap rookie contract. Brian Branch, perhaps, right?
He's a definite possibility. Certainly the best and the only first round safety on the market. And again, that's a position of need after Julian Love leaves. You know, I don't know. I think they like Jason Pinnock. I don't know if they trust him to be their starting safety for 17 games. If that's that remains to be seen. Dane Belton obviously did not have a great rookie year. Did have two interceptions, but overall did not have a very good rookie year. And the Giants were obviously not happy with the way he was playing, because they essentially benched him in the middle of the season, and Jason Pinnock took his job while Xavier McKinney was out. So, you know, if they're going to go number one safety, it's going to be Brian Branch. And, you know, that could be a really good pick. at that position, because there's a very good chance that he's the best player on a big board for a team drafting at that position. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I'm getting very good at doing these draft simulators. And the one I'm doing is on the NFL mock draft database, which I've found to be pretty good. And they have the two best available players on the board after when you get to number 25 as Will Levis, and the Giants aren't taking Will Levis, and Brian Branch. So, you know, it's very possible that, you know, and then the next two after that are Michael Mayer, the tight end from Notre Dame. They're not taking a tight end from Notre Dame. And Kancey, a defensive lineman from Pitt. I can't see them taking a defensive lineman. The next two guys are probably the most interesting that they might take are Zay Flowers and Osiris Torrance. To me, if the draft board fell the way this simulator has fell, you'd be choosing between Branch, Flowers, and Osiris Torrance. Who would you choose between those three?
Between those three players or the 25th pick? I would take Branch.
You'd take Branch?
Total shot in the dark, but...
All right. Well, I just
think Flowers is more of a slot guy, and I get it. You know, you want to have slot. But again, you just drafted a guy in round two last year. And there was a redundancy comment about, obviously, with Rondale Robinson. Oh, there's redundant with Kadarius Toney. But Kadarius Toney was a knucklehead. So, like, there was a reason why you were, drafting. And he wasn't drafted by your regime. I mean, Rondale Robinson is a solid guy by all accounts, and they – He just got hurt, so this durability issue. But he was drafted by this regime, so that's why I would say no to Flowers. And I think with Torrance, I don't know. I just think that you draft a center in the second round, and then you have Ben Bredesen be your left guard.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Is that your pick then?
No.
You sprung this on me, and then I sprung that on you. Yeah. So if you want to make a different pick. Go ahead.
Yeah. Right. So I think, that kind of, we put a bow there on all the, we talked about all their positions they could address. So what will they do? Right. So we don't know, but like, I like them taking a cornerback at 25, and who knows how it falls, but I'm not going to copy the exact thing that Kiper McShay had here with Deontay Banks. I will have them going with Emmanuel Forbes, who goes 22nd to the Ravens in this Kiper McShay mock. So he could certainly be there at 25. He's from Mississippi State. The issue with him is he's really slight, really thin. He's a 166. Man, it would be.
His six interceptions returns for touchdowns is that's pretty impressive. Isn't that a number with him?
It is, and he picked off 14 passes in college. I'm reading the blurb here that they wrote about him. I had looked at his scouting report on NFL.com a little bit. And they do a really good job, Lance Zierlein. He's 166. I would love to be 166 again. I don't think I've been 166 since like seventh grade. But this dude is somehow 166.
I mean, it was like third grade.
He's 6'1", 166, so he has the length. I mean, obviously – the weight and stuff's going to be an issue potentially with like physicality and like, can he put on weight and is he going to get pushed around? But you know, you can't stretch guys in terms of making them taller or longer. You can put muscle on them. And so I think the guy runs a 4.35. He has in terms of the 40 yard dash. So there's going to be questions about bulk, size being pushed around. We talked about it. They need a corner, but the length is, going to be, it could be an asset in man coverage. And so that the Giants obviously want to play a lot of that. How will he be against the run? That's going to be a question mark. But I think that cornerback's a reasonable prognostication, and in the interest of not copying what the Kiper McShay there had with Deontay Banks, I'll go Emmanuel Forbes. I'm going to be totally transparent. I have not like sat and studied this guy's film. All right. But like just reading about what we know about him seems reasonable, I guess. That's sort of the caveat with everything with all these pre-draft conversations. Who you got? Who do you have at 25?
So while we were speaking, I just did another simulation And in this simulation, Emmanuel Forbes is listed as the 33rd prospect on their board, but he's also available in this simulation. He wasn't in the last one. And in this simulation, Bijan Robinson is available, which is what I would do, but I don't think the Giants are going to do it. I don't. And Brian Branch comes up here again. And I think I would take Brian Branch if he's the best available player. You know, in these two simulations I just did, Will Levis and Bijan Robinson are the only two players ahead of him on the board in terms of talent. And I think if he's available, and he's the best player on your board, I think you take him. You have two Alabama safeties starting for you next season. I don't see anything wrong with that at all. I like Alabama players. So that's what I would do if he's the guy available. Safeties aren't all that sexy anymore in terms of a first round pick, but I think if this guy's clearly, which he seems to be, the best safety out there. Hey, if you can get the best at any position in the draft with the 25th overall pick, I think you've done pretty well.
Agreed. That's a great point. And we can wrap it up on that. We'll see what the Giants do in a week, less than a week for the first round. So obviously round one on Thursday night, rounds two and three on Friday night, and rounds 4-7 on Saturday afternoon.
I sure wish we could spend another 6 weeks talking about the draft.
It's been a weird one because, the Giants don't have a high pick. They're not in the market for a quarterback. And so, again, they had the Barkley and Lawrence situations, most notably Barkley, hovering over the spring. So it's like, the draft has been kind of an afterthought, but again, it's really important for a team that still has a lot of roster holes that overachieve. I mean, let's be honest. If you look at what the Giants accomplished last year in terms of winning 9.5 games, in terms of making the divisional round, and then you look at like the objective talent of their roster, it doesn't match up. So like if you just take a harsh look at this team, like Joe Shane needs to do really well in this draft. So, again, the margin is squeezed a little bit by trading away the third round pick. He doesn't have as many swings as last year. And so he
doesn't have the swing at 5-7. I mean, this is a tough draft for him. It'll be a good, good test for, how well he does building this team this year, because it's obviously a pivotal second year, for him after, good for him. The bar is probably set higher than anybody expected it to be because of what they did last year, but also a tough position for him.
For sure. And so we'll be back here with you guys really that the first week of May. I mean, Monday, May 1st is right after all the dust settles on the draft and all the things with like UDFAs or whatever, but we'll do one of these the first week of May to wrap up the draft, and look ahead to spring practices and stuff. I doubt anything will have changed with Dexter Lawrence and Saquon Barkley by then. Maybe Aaron Rodgers will be a Jet finally by the first week of May. Not that we'll talk about that too much. But so we'll see you guys back here that first week of May coming out of the draft. Enjoy the draft. Always a fun viewing experience for fans, I know, especially that Saturday afternoon hanging out. Used to be that long marathon day, even when I was a kid. No longer, not as long of a day, but still, certainly a fun experience for fans to see what their GM is going to do, and a big, big draft, obviously, for Joe Shane. So in the meantime, please like, subscribe, rate, review, follow us on all your podcasting platforms. We will be back here with you guys certainly sooner rather than later. So in the meantime, take care, everybody. Have a good one.